It's intermission time here at Severance Hall, and here is our regular intermission host, Klaus Roy, Publications Director and Program Annotator for the Cleveland Orchestra. Klaus?
Thank you, Robert. Once again, we have the privilege of talking with Pierre Boulez, the world-renowned composer and conductor, who is currently holding at least three posts of enormous responsibility and influence. That of music director of the New York Philharmonic, chief conductor of the BBC Symphony Orchestra of London, and musical advisor and principal guest conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra. The latter assignment is sadly coming to a close this season because A, his five-year contract with us has now expired, and B, because the enormous pressures of the first two positions make a continuation in Cleveland impossible. This is then perhaps the last time we shall be talking on these broadcasts until that happy day when he returns in a future season as guest conductor. And Mr. Boulez, if you permit, it might be helpful to our radio audiences if we gave them excerpts from the splendid article summing up your Cleveland years, written a few weeks ago by the music critic of the Plain Dealer of Cleveland and published on March 12th. Then we can discuss your view of the same issues, a little like the four novels by Lawrence Durrell called the Alexandria Quartet, the same events recounted by different observers. Here then is a set of excerpts from a rather frank article by Robert Finn in the Plain Dealer. He said, "The value of Pierre Boulez's contribution to the musical life of this city has been incalculable. His efforts to inject a fair amount of early 20th century music into our collective ear have been enormously stimulating. These efforts have also certainly been controversial in some quarters, not including the membership of the Cleveland Orchestra's Board of Trustees, a significant number of whom have been regular absentees from his concerts. There are people who should know better, who are openly glad that Boulez is leaving. There have been others whose musical minds have been so tightly closed that they would simultaneously stay away from his programs and protest against them. The idea that Boulez has behaved here like a wild-eyed musical radical, stuffing down Cleveland's throat a lot of indigestible experimental music, is simply not true, as an examination of his programs will show. With perhaps two or three exceptions, his programs have been mixtures of the old and the new, and most of the new has been music that any public pretending to musical literacy should get to know. Major pieces by Schoenberg, Ives, Bartok, Berg, Messiaen, Stravinsky, and such masters. These are the classics of the early 20th century, just as surely as Brahms and Schumann symphonies are the classics of the 19th and Mozart piano concertos of the 18th. Boulez has had the sense to follow a historical process in leading his audience to these works, showing by shrewd programming their roots in the music of Debussy and the early works of Bartok and Stravinsky. Boulez, as a conductor of more standard repertory, has been indeed controversial, but the one thing you cannot say is that he ignored older music. A quick glance back over old programs shows these pieces, the 4th, 5th, and 6th symphonies of Schubert, Haydn's Nelson Mass and several other Haydn works, the Beethoven 2nd, the Mahler 5th, several major Mozart items, Handel's Water Music Suite, and a large amount of Berlioz, Symphonie Fantastique, Nuit d'été, and the complete Romeo and Juliet. Aside from his own doubles given in his first concert here and the Carta Concerto for Orchestra, it is hard to think of anything genuinely new and experimental. Boulez will be deeply missed here as teacher and lecturer too. His informal evenings, though they did not catch on at the box office, were splendid and stimulating. He was always ready and willing to lecture to any group, and anyone who heard him will have to admit that he's a brilliant, personable, and charming lecturer. Boulez developed a warm rapport with the players during his time here. For his part, he has been loud in their praise in interviews all over the world, and he helped in a very real way to keep them at the top of their bent during the last two difficult years," unquote, Robert Finn in a recent issue of The Plain Dealer. Now, sir, since you have a mind that can retain clearly even the most complex scores as well as verbal ideas, would you comment in a sort of aleatoric chance music way on the issues Mr. Finn raised?
Well, I think it was very positive. I have not to complain or almost not to comment about it. What I think he pointed was absolutely right. That's generally One thought that my programs were unbalanced, but on the contrary, I was very careful, and since the beginning I was there, I remember the first programs I gave in this community were after a discussion with George Sell. And if George Sell did not find these programs too wild, I can imagine that even members of the Board of Trustees cannot find that too wild also. I think on the contrary, that was a very deep relationship between George Sell and myself, that he understood, for instance, that beyond a certain point in the history, he had maybe no taste for some works or some composers, but he found deeply necessary to do them, and if he gave me his orchestra to do them, I think he was pretty confident, and he knew perfectly well that I will not spoil his orchestra, because his orchestra was his great pride, his greatest pride maybe, and I think so he would not have given, you know, this pride just to toy for me, and so to have that as a toy. And I think, as on the contrary, and I think that's a model of behavior from the part of George Sell, that he understood absolutely the necessity of going forward, and he gave me more or less the responsibility of doing it in this community.
Some people sometimes felt that in order to cover as much repertoire as possible, you occasionally weighted a program almost too heavily with new pieces, so that they sort of canceled each other out as a challenge to the public.
I don't think that's happened maybe once, yeah, as a matter of fact. I think last year we did a program when there was two heavy works, the Piano Concerto by Schoenberg and the Variations of the 31, yes, by Schoenberg. And maybe that was too much for a single concert, although I don't find myself that's really a very difficult work to absorb. But anyway, I can understand this position. But most of the works we have done, especially, were really very balanced, if only for one reason, that you have no time to rehearse properly a complete evening of very difficult pieces. You have four, or in some cases five rehearsals, and in five rehearsals, if you want really to perform the pieces well, you have no time to perform, let's say, four contemporary pieces. It's impossible.
Those who really are aware of the progression of musical history have never found your programs controversial. You simply gave us music that we ought to know. And it's as simple as that. Can we live for 50 years without having heard a certain masterpiece of the 20th century?
Yes, I think so. That's exactly the point. You know, sometimes when I look at your programs, which are always very carefully annotated and very precise as dates and references and so on, I am amazed myself that to have seen that some pieces are given for the first time either at these concerts or in Cleveland even. And some pieces one cannot anymore ignore. Ignore them will be like, for instance, ignore paintings by Mondrian or paintings by Picasso or paintings by anybody of this stature. I mean.
Let me point out something that I think will come just in time too, before the next program, the Pelléas und Mélisande. I say und because it's the way what Schoenberg called it, this great tone poem. That is the most romantic music in the world. And if audiences stay away thinking that it's by Schoenberg and therefore they won't get it, they are missing a tremendous hyper-romantic experience.
I think, you know, sometimes I would like to do it, even if that implies a certain amount of cheating. I would like to replace the name Schoenberg by Richard Strauss.
Yes.
And I am sure people would be very enthusiastic, because the simple fact that the name of the composer is Schoenberg makes them absolutely anxious, rebellious, and having prejudgments before having heard the piece. And sometimes, and in most of the case, they simply don't come, they stay away in order to avoid this confrontation.
Well, if they hear the Pelléas und Mélisande on the radio after having missed it in Severance, I think they will feel extremely foolish not to have come. I can't imagine a more romantic work than this.
I think, you know, my own attitude is generally to be confronted with facts.
Yes.
I cannot imagine just being away because I think the facts are this way or this way. If you are never confronted with facts, you will never just have exactly a kind of relationship with the real world. You will be always living in your absolutely obsolete world, and that does not help, I must say.
I heard a story the other day of a very opinionated gentleman of the oldest school, I think, in Europe, who after a certain performance kept jumping up and down in the room and picking his nose and being on one foot. And finally he said, I have made a decision. I liked it.
Well, that's not the case of an old gentleman I met here going to the Serkin concert. And I just, you know, bumped into him and he recognized me, certainly. And he told me simply, abruptly, after the concert of Stravinsky, he told me, why do you play all this Stravinsky junk? And among the junk were Les Noces and the Wind Symphonies, which are really masterpieces of the 20th century. And I cannot imagine that's how the word, even junk, can go out of your mouth if you have heard such masterpieces.
It's very sad. Richard Strauss once was confronted by a lady who said, Mr. Strauss, I really didn't like your latest opera at all. And Strauss said, how sad for you, madame.
Well, he was very sure of himself, that's all.
Not last Sunday, as a matter of fact, today as we are talking, Mr. Finn had another column in The Plain Dealer in which he described one of your wonderful confrontations with young people that you gave in a local church just a few days ago. You have been extremely busy and active and willing to talk with young people on the problems of music and, let's say, the challenges of popular music to serious as far as audience participation and audience presence is concerned. Do you feel that you leave with these audiences at least the sense of re-examination?
I try to put in them at least a doubt about what they are thinking. Because I think that's, life, especially for young people, is absolutely not valid if you don't put into question yourself. You know, you see very much about young people. So I don't rely on age generally, because age for me is a category which does not exist. You have people who are very lively at 20 or at 75, and you have people who are dead at 20 or at 75. That's simply, I think that if young people want to protest and to have their, you know, their own ideas on culture, or what is music, or what is literature, whatever, that's all right, and that's very good. So, because each generation must have its own ideas. But what I find really impossible to bear, practically, that's this type of assurance based on nothing. And I think that's the first critical approach of a period of our time has to begin first with a critical approach of oneself. Otherwise, you will never make progress and never really see the reality also.
Yes, well, what you pointed out in that talk at our local Harkness Chapel was the necessity of bringing a degree of effort to listening to serious music, which is something that the popular idiom simply doesn't demand.
No, that's just a kind of enjoyment, very superficial enjoyment. And I have told them, of course, I am not against just enjoyment at this level. I told myself once in an interview a phrase which was also taken very seriously once. I say, I don't brush my teeth with Parsifal. And that's true. I mean, I don't want just that in life you are always preoccupied with very serious problems. But one must be aware of the different categories, and you cannot make confusion between one category and another one.
You have become a wonderful member of our community here, not least because you were always willing to talk to people. Our audiences should know that Mr. Boulez, with all the pressures on him, has always had an open door to a student who came to talk with him, and he always gave him more than the time of day. And this is unusual among the big people in their field.
Well, let's say that I feel that's an obligation, practically. And not only an obligation, but I have this attitude by curiosity. Because I find the more you have to do, the more you are isolated in these so-called high positions, the less you have opportunity to be challenged, because you are given you're giving each time your own ideas. But especially young people are not so aware of your high position or not, and that doesn't matter for them, and rightly so. Therefore, if you are just discussing with them, you are discussing on a level where you must be, because I find that's more challenging. That's to accept always, you know, some critical remarks or some praise, which practically become very unreal after a while. But then if you meet people with very strong views and some opposition views, not only I don't mind, but I am interested, because sometimes, maybe in being so busy all the time, you miss something very important, and in order to avoid to miss something, that's much better
you
if you're informed for the first
Well, course. The public here in Cleveland will have its last opportunity to hear one of your splendid informal evenings on March 31st, when you devote the evening to the music of Stravinsky. Here you are doing these four one-composer programs, Stravinsky, Bartok, Schoenberg, and Mahler, during your last weeks here, which are really most stimulating. I'm only sorry that we did not hear more of your own music during your tenure, but I think that will probably come in
later.
We are most grateful. Our time has run out, unfortunately, to have had the opportunity of talking once more with Pierre Boulez, the principal guest conductor and musical advisor of the Cleveland Orchestra, who is now completing his fifth year with the orchestra. We very much hope to have you return often and regularly as guest conductor. We shall miss you immensely until then. May I close by wishing you the one thing that a man of your attainments may enjoy having but doesn't really need to do his work. Lots of luck. Thank you, and now back to Robert Conrad.
Thank you very much.